Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor. The end of the J2 season is fast approaching, but there is still so much yet to be decided. And joining me to discuss the Match Day 40 games is my regular co-host, John Steele. Hi John, how are you?
Hi James, very well, thanks. Yeah, good to be back together again. And before we start, I just want to say congratulations on your debut appearance on the Big Pod earlier this week. Fantastic stuff, and you were repping the JTEP brand in fine style.
Oh yeah, thanks very much. It was good fun, and I did enjoy, giving a bit of JTET and J2 to the masses. Assuming, of course, that Big Pod has more listeners than us. I don't know the numbers, but anyway.
Yeah, let's move on quickly.
All right, we've got four games to talk about this week, and we're going to start with a match between two teams hoping to sneak into sixth place: FIFA and Nagasaki and Tokushima Vortis. They played on Saturday afternoon, and it was Tokushima who went ahead in the 18th minute. A neat backheel by Shota Fujio beat a sliding defender, and then he shot from 25 yards, and actually keeper Takashi Kasahara helped it into the top corner. I think he should have done a lot better there. And then in the 37th minute, the lead was doubled. A corner was flicked to the back post. There was a shot from a free man, and it was headed in by Kazuki Nishiya and his impressive multicoloured mullet from about 6 yards. And Nagasaki pulled one back in the 74th minute. Kayo Cesar received a throw-in on the edge of the area. He dribbled through a few defenders and teed it up very nicely for Shunya Yoneda to sweep in from about 20 yards. But Nagasaki couldn't find an equaliser, and it finished 2-1 to Tokushima. John, what did you think about this match?
Yeah, I think if you look at the scoreline, it's a narrow win for Tokushima, isn't it? But I think the defending from Nagasaki on the two goals that you've described earlier was really poor. And I think Nagasaki, in general, were quite flat in this game, especially in the first half. And you mentioned in the kind of intro that they're hoping to sneak into the top six. Performances like this and the form that they're in, I think that's four defeats and a draw from their last five. I mean, they're having their own version of a kind of Sendai-style end-of-season collapse, aren't they? Mm. Yeah, I don't think they were very impressive in this game at all. You mentioned Kasahara, who I watched the replay of that shot from Shota Fujio a couple of times to see if maybe it moved in the air or there was something to kind of put the goalkeeper off, but I think it was just bad technique. He should easily have kind of pouched that ball, but just ended up, like you said, patting it into the top corner. And then, yeah, for the second one, that corner kick ran all the way through to the back post. And I think it was Koki Sugimori there, completely unmarked in loads of space. He put in a shot. And that, yes, you mentioned the beautiful kind of two-tone mullet of Kazuki Nishiya just kind of touched it in into the net. So I don't think Nagasaki can have too many complaints, even though it was a narrow defeat on paper. I thought they were second best pretty much. And I think... when I talked to Daniel last time, the Nagasaki supporters blog, Daniel Kuroda, he was saying that I think Fabio Carrile is kind of all about next season. He's been brought in to kind of whip the team into shape over the winter break. The form that they're showing at the moment, I wouldn't be overly confident he's actually going to be there, for the start of next season. I think even though for me, Nagasaki have pretty much blown it now, and I don't see them getting into the top six. They perhaps need a couple of good performances in the games that they have left just to make sure that Fabio Carrile is still there, for next season. But I haven't mentioned Tokushima yet, and they actually won the game, didn't they? And suddenly, after kind of being perhaps unfairly, I'm starting to think, the kind of subject of many, many a joke on the pod this year about how they love a draw. With two games to go, James, they're suddenly in sixth place, aren't they? They're in the playoff zone, and they're level on points with Sendai, who are spontaneously combusting. So, it's starting to look as though Tokushima might actually get into the kind of postseason, to use an Americanism. And, they're playing with a lot of confidence. They look good. Those draws that they were having so often and continue to have are often, becoming wins now, aren't they? And... have I got this right? They're unbeaten in 18? Yeah. They're an 18-game unbeaten run?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at basically, this is probably a spoiler for the rest of the pod, but if we can agree that the the sixth place, you know, finish is kind of between Tokushima, Yamagata and Sendai. I mean, Tokushima are the only team showing any kind of form at all at the moment. So you'd have to make them favourites, given that they're holding sixth place at the moment and they're 18 games unbeaten. I think they've got left Omiya at home, right? And then Yamagata away.
Yeah.
So, they are not not the most intimidating games you could have for the final two. So, I'm kind of expecting them maybe to go on and sneak into the top six. And perhaps we'll have to reassess their early season draw fest, because, it might stand them in good stead, for getting into the playoffs. I don't know, am I too harsh on Nagasaki and too kind on Tokushima? What do you think?
I think, with Nagasaki, when Karila took over, they had a really good new manager bounce, didn't they? Had a good run of form. And that's what kind of pushed them up into the playoff picture. And then they had that COVID cluster and had a few games postponed. And I think that has taken its toll on them. I don't know if it is COVID or if it's just the schedule, because the schedule was pretty bad for a while when they were making up those matches. And their defence has been pretty bad recently. There was a run of a few games where they're conceding two or three every game. And, their attack kind of dried up as well. And now, they're only two wins in their last 10. That form's not, that's not promotion form. But they've got to play Yamaguchi at home and Omiya away. Those are teams that they should really beat. But on the current form or recent form, or even second half of the season form, they're not, those are not guaranteed wins for them, I don't think. And I think it would be a bit strange for them to sack the manager with him having been there less than one season. But I mean, they sacked Tegura Mori for only finishing third in 2020, and that in hindsight was a terrible decision, I think.
Perhaps that makes Fabio Carrile's position a bit safer, because I think it's generally accepted at the club that was too hasty, sacking Tegura Mori when they did. So that might be something in Fabio Carrile's favour. Yeah,
and as for Tokushima, I think they've drawn 23 out of 40. It's absolutely fair to joke about that. That is a ridiculous statistic by anyone's standards. However, they are in the playoffs now. They're in the playoff spots, and they're showing the value of not losing. Okay. Well, obviously winning is better, but if you can avoid losing, then at least they've set a platform for the rest of the season. And now, unbeaten in 18 games, which is incredible. But only lost five. They've got the best defence in the league. They've only conceded 31 goals. That's better than Niigata. I think we're right to laugh at them. And I think also now we're right to praise them, because they're kind of hitting form. They started putting a few wins together now in the last month or two. Although, if they finish sixth, that means that drawing a match in the playoffs will see them eliminated. So that might be a problem.
I think, I think on the kind of a strong defence, something that we have been consistent about all season is picking out Jose Suarez, the goalkeeper. And I think, I know you have quite rightly a soft spot for Masaaki Goto and probably Yuto Shirai as well. But I think for my money, Jose Suarez has been the best goalkeeper hands down, or possibly hands up, considering he's a goalkeeper. But this season, he's just been unbelievable.
Yes, yeah, he has. And I think when it comes to like end of season awards and stuff, I'd be very surprised if he was not the, voted like best goalkeeper or the goalie in the, if they're doing the best 11 or whatever at the J League.
Golden Glove.
Yeah, something like that. I think he's been excellent, and he's marshalled that defence really, really well. And yeah, well, it'll be interesting if they can hold on And let's move on to our second game, shall we? We've got another playoff team against a struggling team, Raso Kumamoto against Zaspa Ksatsugunma. This one, I've got to take a deep breath because there's a lot of goals to describe here. So, Kumamoto went ahead in the 15th minute when Toshiki Takahashi nipped in front of Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki to head in at the near post. 20 minutes later, it was 2-0. Koki Sakamoto received a crossfield pass on the left, cut in past one defender, went round another, stopped to let the first defender slide across him, then chipped a shot that Kushibiki got a hand to, but could only tip over the covering goal line defender and into the net. Gunma pulled one back a few minutes before half time. A corner found Hajime Hosogai at the far side of the box, and he crossed back in for Shuto Kitagawa to head in. So it was 2-1 at half time, but Kumamoto ran away with it in the second half. In the 66th minute, Shohei Mishima got his first J-League goal, arriving unimpeded to head in across from the left. In the 80th minute, Naohiro Sugiyama, Yuhi Takemoto and Rei Hirakawa passed their way into the Gunma area for the latter to score from 8 yards. And then in the 85th minute, a booming corner missed everyone, but Keisuke Tanabe lashed a shot from 20 yards. So it finished Kumamoto 5, Gunma 1. Ouch. John, can you talk us through this one?
Yeah, ouch, indeed. And that's just you and I trying to get through the highlights and make sure we covered everything when there's six goals in one game. Yeah, I think you mentioned in the previous game, you know, Tokushima, because they draw so often, they might not relish having an away game in the playoffs if they make it into the top six come the end of the season. No one is going to be looking forward to going to Kumamoto, right? If they finish fourth and have a home tie in the first round of the playoffs, a very, very good attacking side. You know, that's something that's been shown time and time again this season. I think from a Gunma point of view, I mean, sometimes a 5-1 scoreline doesn't tell you the whole story. And, you know, maybe we could say, okay, two of the goals for Kumamoto came in the last 10 minutes when Gunma clearly exhausted. But I think, as far as I could tell from watching the highlights, this was pretty much a 5-1 game and could possibly be more. I think that it really felt like there was a division, or most of a division, certainly in terms of a league table between these two. I think Takemoto got 3 assists, didn't he? I think a hat-trick of assists in this game. So Gunma just couldn't really cope with what Kumamoto were doing attacking-wise. They do always give you a little bit of a chance in defence, don't they? You know, I think maybe Shuto Kitagawa heading in that Hajime Hosogai cross, that gave Gunma a little bit of false hope before half-time. But this was really, I think classic example of a home team that's got their tails up and is playing good football. I think they knew that a win would clinch their playoff place, so they were fully determined to go and get it. For Gunma, I mean, this is not, as in a couple of games since they let in 6 at home to Yamaguchi, isn't it? So perhaps not surprising to see them letting in so many. I didn't really feel they ever kind of got to grips with the game, and I think they didn't show much ability to get anything out of the game. And I think once the second goal went in, that was probably the critical one, wasn't it? Even though they pulled the goal back after that, they were never really in any danger of getting anything out of this game. I think, just to mention the bottom of the table briefly, Gunma might just escape. I think they might just get by virtue of being, you know, the third worst team in a league that only has 2 relegation places, so that they might be okay finishing third bottom. But yeah, Kumamoto, I wouldn't want to bet against them in the playoffs, to be honest. I think as long as they get a home game, they're going to be a tough match for anybody, aren't they? Yeah, well, I don't know. What do you think, James?
Yeah, well, Kumamoto, amazing. It's an incredible season. It just keeps going, doesn't it? And they're guaranteed to finish at least 5th. And they've only lost 2 of their last 10. And I mean, they could even finish 3rd, which would be amazing, wouldn't it? But I think, they've got to play Sendai away and Yokohama FC at home. So they've got 2 really tasty matches coming up to flex their playoff credentials for the coming fixtures. But I'm not sure there's much to say about them that we haven't said already. They've been amazing, and they just another one of those games where they look like scoring every time they go forward. They seem to have so many enterprising attackers capable of creating and finishing chances. Whereas Gunma, their goal difference has taken a bashing in recent weeks. I don't know if that will come into the equation with relegation, but it can't be good for the supporters' health to see them pull off an amazing 1-0 win away to Akita and then lose 6-1 at home to Yamaguchi, and then a good 1-0 win at home against Omiya, and then losing 5-1 away to Kumamoto.
Not many positives from a Gunma point of view from this game.
Yeah, and they don't score enough. They're highly rated of the rankings of teams that have won 1-0 or won by a goal. Gunma have a pretty good record. Most of their wins are 1-0 or by a goal, and that's because they have the joint worst goals scored record with Tochigi. The difference is Tochigi have only conceded 7 more than they've scored, whereas Gunma have now conceded 24 more than they've scored, which is the same as Ryukyu.
Well, I think Kitagawa, that was his first goal of the season, the commentator said, in this game. So I checked back, but he's actually played loads of games. He's had loads of minutes. Now, he's a striker, and that's his first goal. It's round 40, you know. I feel like I could have got one. I could probably got one by now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but we've talked about Gunma. Whenever we talk about them, we say, what's their expectation and or what's their aim for the year? And surely it's to finish third bottom, and they might just about do that. And the next match is going to be huge, isn't it? They're playing Iwate at home.
That's right. Yeah, I think if you ask Gunma, you know, you can be 5 points clear of the relegation zone with 2 games left at the start of the season. They may well have taken it, like you said. It's about expectation.
Yeah. And if things go badly against Iwate, then they've got Mito away. And I don't know what more there is to be said about Gunma either, really. Bring back
Genki Omai.
Yeah, well, it's almost like they're undoing their good work. They pull off a great win and then they go and get thrashed, and they pull off another good win and they go get thrashed again. Going back to Kumamoto, I saw this was Yuya Sato's 400th J-League appearance, which is a very impressive achievement. And I think, am I right in thinking Takeshi Oki was named Manager of the Month for September?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
So recognition for excellent recent achievements and long-term achievements at Kumamoto, and hopefully they'll continue to get these results and play the way they're playing, because they're great fun to watch. And
I think, to be honest, of the current top four, they are my favourite team to watch. I think Yokohama and Okayama might be more effective or rugged, but they're not as entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I've enjoyed watching Kumamoto when I've seen them this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on over the last few weeks of the season. Let's move on from that match, and let's talk about the early kickoff on Sunday, where Vanfore Kofu took on Fagiano Okayama. So Kofu, fresh off that superb Emperor's Cup semi-final win over Kashima Antlers, and knowing that they were safe in J2 after Iwate's loss to Tokyo Verdy on Saturday, whereas Okayama were looking to keep up the pressure on Yokohama FC after that loss to Kanazawa last week, which I have to mention because it was brilliant, and I wasn't on the pod last week to talk about it. So this one there, well, Kofu, they went behind in the 43rd minute. A long ball down the left for Shunpei Narase to run onto, and his low cross was turned in by Ryo Nagai to give Okayama a lead just before half-time. But Kofu drew level in the 73rd minute. A short corner routine, a cross from Motoki Hasegawa, and a header in by Hidehiro Sugai. However, in the 80th minute, A long throw for Okayama bounced off a leg in the box. There was a shot from the edge of the box that was saved, but it was fumbled by the keeper Kohei Kawata, and Han Iguon scored the winner. So it finished Kofu 1, Okayama 2. John, what did you make of this man?
Yeah, I think Okayama winning the match, you know, if you just check the results on online or kind of in black and white on paper, it's not that surprising. But I think I wasn't really sure what to expect from Kofu before this game, because like you mentioned, obviously they'd had the kind of big win over Kashima. They were in the Emperor's Cup final, you know, based on the midweek game. So you didn't know if they were going to be up for this game or maybe just take it easy and have one eye on the Emperor's Cup final coming up. But I actually thought Kofu played really well. They gave a good account of themselves. They asked Okayama some questions, caused them some problems, and they didn't rest any players. So I was kind of half expecting they might leave a few players out with the cup final coming up. But yeah, there was one point during the first half when it was nil, Motoki Hasegawa, he played a ball right across the Okayama goal line. Did you see that on the highlights? He was just begging for somebody to tap it in. But Willian Lira, unfortunately, wasn't on the same wavelength. He wasn't in the right place. But yeah, perhaps if Kofu had gone in front, it might have been a different story. But yes, as you mentioned, Ryo Nagai, a name that hasn't been on the score sheet for a couple of years, I don't think. It's good to see him back among the goals. That put Okayama in front. And then in my notes, I mentioned I felt like the game, you know, sort of stayed in the balance for a while after that. And most Okayama games do, don't they? They're definitely more in that kind of Yokohama FC school of go in front and then kind of spoil the game is a bit too strong.
Manage the game.
Yeah, they don't quite park the bus, but they turn the engine over a little bit. You know, they're getting the bus ready. You know, for the last 10 minutes. And yeah, that almost cost them, didn't it? As you mentioned, I've got the exact same phrase in my notes, a short corner routine for that Hidehiro Sugai equalizer. But then Okayama, they do have an extra gear, I think, that they showed in the last 10 minutes, even if the extra gear is just more long throws from Shuhei Tokumoto, which is going to stop working at some point. I hope they've got a plan B for when that doesn't bother anybody. Defensively, but Han Iguon, I think he's actually been a really effective addition to the team, hasn't he? I think he took a long time to kind of get integrated or to get minutes, but then he's become a really useful player. I've seen him in the team more and more in the last couple of months. So I think Okayama possibly a little bit fortunate to take all 3 points here. But they're clearly a good side. It's something we've been kind of remarking on all season. And Kofu, I mean, I'm just going to be copying what you said on the big pod already this week. But they do have the potential to do a lot better than they've done this season. It's kind of mystifying that they always seem to, with the exception of the Empress Cup, they just fall short quite often in matches. Like I went to see them, Yokohama FC beat them 1-0 recently, I think last month. And Kofu, again, they were well in that game. They matched Yokohama pretty well, but just you know, they lost by one goal, and that's pretty much exactly what happened here, I felt. So yeah, I don't know, something is missing at Kofu, even if it's something very, you know, a very fine margin. They're not quite getting the job done in league games. But for Okayama, well, they had to win, didn't they, to keep their kind of automatic promotion dream alive for another week. So however they got the win, I don't think they'll be too bothered in the end. I don't know, what do you think, James?
I happened to check the match stats for this on Football Lab, and I think I'm going to tell you all of them because they're pretty interesting, amusing in a way. Shots, overall shots, Kofu had 26, Okayama had 8. Shots on goal, 17 for Kofu, 7 for Okayama. Passes, 562 for Kofu, 172 for Okayama. Oof. Corners, 11 for Kofu, none for Okayama. And possession, 65% Kofu, 35% Okayama.
It's that hashtag, hashtag smash and grab.
Yeah, exactly. That is the almost the very definition of smash and grab. But it's the roles reversed from what I would have expected. I would have expected Okayama to come out and control the match and to to play Kofu off the park, but Kofu, in the highlights, most of their efforts were wide or off target. I remember one from Araki, one from Hasegawa, and one from Matsumoto that were off target. But they still had 17 shots on target. I mean, some of those might have just been weak ones that were not worthy of mention. But in his player stats, the Okayama keeper Daiki Hotta said he made 5 saves. So there were at least 5 decent chances that he had to deal with. So I was a little bit surprised because it seems like Kofu really came out all guns blazing for this one. I guess they were galvanized by knowing that they were safe and having that excellent win in the cup in midweek, or wanting to give their home supporters something because they've been so poor in the league this year. And it was just a strange one, I think. I mean, they're 18th, they're safe now. It's just been such a strange year.
A strange team, strange team this year.
Yeah, I don't really know how to analyze it, to be honest, because I don't recall there being that much of an overhaul in the squad. And I don't remember them like losing many players or particularly important players over the winter. And they have such a lot of talented attacking players, but for some reason, they're just not getting it done. Whereas Okayama, like you said, they're really good at managing games. And I think this was a good comeback from the previous week's loss, which I think shocked them. I don't think they expected to lose 3-1 to Kanazawa. I don't think Kanazawa expected to beat them 3-1. I certainly didn't expect Kanazawa to do that. But I think that loss might have ruined their hopes of finishing second, although it's not out of the question. It's going to be difficult. They have to go to Akita next, which is not easy. And I think Akita will enjoy playing the role of spoiler, as they kind of did to Jeff at the weekend. And then Okayama have to... Oh, sorry, no, they're playing Akita at home, but still not easy. And then they've got Tokyo Verdy away. And Verdy are playing all right. They've got good run of results going at the moment. Whereas Kofu, well, their next game is the most important one, isn't it? They're playing Hiroshima in the cup final. And then they've got Machida away midweek and Iwate at home. So in the league, for them, nothing really to play for apart from pride and contracts for next year. But yeah, it's all on Sunday for them, isn't it? This season, really.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Good. Right, we've got one more game. This was the last one of the weekend, Sunday evening. Yokohama FC welcomed their former manager Takahiro Shimotaira and his Oita Trinita side. So Yokohama, knowing that Okayama had won earlier in the day, and Oita knowing that Kumamoto had won the previous day and Tokushima had moved into sixth as well. And it was the away side, Oita, who took the lead early on in the 5th minute. A big cross from the right, and Tsukasa Umesaki was standing between two defenders 12 yards out, but neither of them jumped. He did, and he headed perfectly out of Yuji Rokutan's reach to put Oita ahead. But the home side equalised in the 22nd minute. Oita twice gave the ball away in midfield in consecutive passages of play. And the second time, Koki Ogawa was on hand to score his 23rd goal of the season. But right on half-time, Oita went ahead again. Hokuto Shimoda, direct free kick that Rokutan didn't see until it was basically past him, although it went pretty much into the middle of the goal. So I think we'll talk about that one in a minute. And in the 56th minute, Yokohama drew level again. Oita again lost possession, about 25 yards out. Takuya Wada squared for Kosuke Saito, but it ran straight through for Ogawa, arriving all alone at the back post for his 24th of the season. But Oita scored again. They got a third in the 72nd minute. Naoki Nomura with a rocket from 25 yards after Yokohama FC were dispossessed trying to dribble away from their own area. And it finished that way. Yokohama FC 2, Oita 3. John, you were at this game, weren't you? How was it?
Well, it was wet and cold because, the weather forecast for Sunday when this game was played was a cloudy all day until 6 p.m. and then pissing rain for the rest of the day. And as luck would have it, the kickoff of this game was at 6 p.m. So, me and my son, we left our house at about 3:30, I guess, which sounds crazy if you're a British listener, but that's what time Japanese people go to the stadium. So we're acclimatized. We arrived really early as well, and it was just starting to come on to rain then. And by the time we got to the stadium, there were quite a few people in the crowds, about 7,900, and it did have that big game feel, because Oita needed the points to seal their playoff place. Obviously, a win for Yokohama FC at home would have meant they were automatically promoted with Niigata. So it had that big game feel, but not having a roof anywhere in the stadium really really tests your resolve for wanting to watch a football match. And I know I'm talking to someone that goes to watch games at Kanazawa. It's a similar issue there, James. So the weather was a problem, but the match was we were disappointed. Obviously, we were wanting Yokohama FC to win, but I don't think you could be disappointed with the entertainment that was on offer. This was a really breathless match, even from the kickoff. I mean, I said to my son, there's going to be a good battle between Shun Nagasawa, friend of Big Pod, against Gabriel, and the Yokohama FC back then. But actually, it turned out to be an interesting tussle at the other end between Marcelo Hian and Pereira. In the Oita defence, because there was actually a chance right in the first minute where, now Marcelo Hian, he's not the most refined player, but he's quick. And he, I don't know if you saw that, this wasn't in the highlights, but he absolutely burned Pereira in the very first minute and got past him and went clean through. Pereira tried to foul him and fell over. The referee gave a free kick to Oita. Presumably because Marcelo had just gone clean through too early, because I don't think it was a foul either way, but if there was a foul there, it was Pereira who was just completely beaten by Marcelo Hian. And I remarked to my son, watch that, because 10 minutes from now Pereira is going to be on a yellow card. And that battle's going to get really interesting. But for whatever reason, that just didn't develop into a pattern of play. I'm sure the Yokohama FC boss, Shuhei Yamada, must know a lot more about football than me, but that would have been my main focal point of attack for the rest of the game, is just trying to isolate a slow centre-back against a quick forward. But you mentioned we kind of, we've been watching football for a long time, James. You know it's not going to be your night sometimes. And when Tsukasa Umesaki scores a towering header from about 16 yards in the fifth minute, you start to think maybe this is not going to go your way. And then, we got back into the game with Koki Ogawa's goal. He's always reliable, in terms of finishing. But the free kick that was the second goal, there's so many problems with this that made it hard to take from a Yokohama FC point of view. Firstly, you mentioned Oita giving the ball away in midfield. It was actually their sort of game plan, the Shimotaro Stennis, that build up from the goalkeeper, from Shun Yoshida. He's just not a very good passer, or he certainly wasn't a very good passer. On the night. So the equaliser, Yokohama FC's first equaliser, was caused when Yoshida gave Nagasawa a hospital pass on the halfway line, basically, and it led to the ball being given away. Now, Rokatan, the Yokohama FC keeper, who's, of course, he's in goal at the moment because Sven Brodersen is still recovering from his concussion problem, but Rokatan gave the ball away, and that was easily intercepted by Yuto Misao. And then when he crossed, Yokohama FC got the ball away, but just to the edge of the box. And then Takiya Wada, he jumped with Masaki Yumiba, and a free kick was given. I think it was a bit harsh, but if you watch the replay, you can see why, because Wada's arm is kind of up in Yumiba's face. The second problem was, this was Oita's second free kick from a similar position, about 25 yards out on the left-hand side. Now, the first one, Umesaki had taken it and fired it into the wall. So I knew we were in trouble, because I knew that meant Hokuto Shimada was probably going to get the nod to have a go this time. And he is a really, really good free kick taker, isn't he? He's just got a wand of a left foot, really. But and at the time, from where I was sitting, it looked like a brilliant free kick and a brilliant goal. But you've mentioned it already. It actually enters the goal. The ball enters the goal, like, right in the middle of the net.
Yeah.
And Rokitan is just, I don't know if it's his positioning that's wrong or his reaction time, which is off. But it was really one of those moments that made you wish Brodersen was playing, because I'm not sure that goal would have gone in if Brodersen had been there. But that's how it goes sometimes, I suppose. And yeah, we got the second equaliser through Koki Ogawa, as you mentioned. The big moment after that was when Ryoya Yamashita came on. He set up a chance for Ogawa that would have been his hat-trick goal, and it would have put Yokohama 3-2 up. But he just didn't quite catch the ball properly. He put it too close to Yoshida, and the Oita keeper was able to make the save. And then, again, you kind of got your spider sense was tingling. It's not going to be your team's night. Oita were attacking in the 72nd minute, and that move broke down. Yokohama tried to counter, but Marcelo Hian, he tried to just sort of lay the ball off to Tatsuya Hasegawa, but he passed it behind him. The ball ran loose. And Naoki Nomura, who of course is a former Yokohama FC player, he picked it up, and then he just lashed an unstoppable left foot shot past Rokitan for 3-2. I'm not sure he's caught a ball as sweetly as that in his career before and may never again. It's a brilliant goal. And I don't know how you feel about ex-players not celebrating when they score a goal against a former club, James. There's no danger of that here. He went absolutely mental.
Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, quite right too. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And then, yeah, that's how it finished, right? Yokohama FC 2, Oita 3. I'll just mention, because it came up on Twitter from a couple of people, there was some pretty good / despicable time wasting from Oita in this game. I don't know how much of that came through in the highlights package that anyone's watched, but I don't think there was anything too egregious, considering they kind of earned the right to time waste by going 3-2 up. But highlights included, so Naoki Nomura's celebrations for the third goal lasted for about a minute. And then when Yokohama finally got the ball back to the centre circle and were ready to kick off, Pereira just sat on the ground. I think he had a problem with, like, he was bleeding somewhere. He needed to change his shirt and shorts. But it just took forever to sort out. So I don't know why that couldn't have been. Well, I mean, I think we know why that wasn't happening during the celebrations. But I thought that was quite clever / despicable. And then, yeah, Shun Yoshida, the goalkeeper, also had a couple of good ones. Kleber was thrown on as a kind of emergency forward for the last few minutes. And then when they went up together for a high ball, Yoshida pretended or made the most of some contact there, which enraged Kleber. He ended up actually picking him up, like, by his shirt, and stood him back up, which I'm amazed he didn't get a yellow card for that, to be honest. Because and it's also, to be honest, it's a good job Yoshida wasn't really injured, because that is not how you pick someone up if they've got a head injury. And then my favourite was, there was 6 minutes of stoppage time in all this chaos. And in the fourth minute of the six, Yoshida had a goal kick, and he spent ages, like, spotting up the ball. So obviously this is a very important goal kick that you're taking. And then just as he was kind of shaping to kick it downfield, he just stopped and went behind the goal and had a drink of water from his bottle. Yeah. None of that pleased the Yokohama FC fans. But I think as well for the players, a lot of players, Yokohama FC players, just lost their cool. They lost their tempers over this. And I think that was really falling into Oita's trap. I think that's what they wanted. And particularly a player who's perhaps not the most even-tempered, Heiner, he lost his shit completely. And to be honest, most of that 6 minutes of stoppage time when Yokohama could have been hammering on the door to get an equaliser was basically just players, Gabriel, Heiner, Kleber and others just losing their temper, you know, one after another. So I think from Oita's point of view, is that shithousery? Is that effective game management? I think that's up to individual fans to have their say. I don't think they did anything that was over the line. Really, that there was no actual, you know, cheating, I don't think. But it was a bit annoying to say the least. And I think maybe that I'm not sure the referee handled it great. I think perhaps he could have done a bit more to warn the players. But it just all kind of added to the occasion. We had York Arm FC fans singing at times, even though that was not allowed. This wasn't kind of an officially designated, singing match. A huge roar from the Oita end, which was packed when they scored that third goal. And a couple of different announcements over the PA system, sort of begging fans to be quiet inside the stadium, which is good luck with that, to be honest, when it's a big match like that. But it was good stuff, and it's probably testament to the power of football that even though we were soaking wet and cold, we still had a pretty good evening's entertainment. Sorry, I went on a bit of a rant there, James.
It's good. I think that picking up the player pretending to be injured reminded me, Brenner did that earlier in the year, didn't he? He dragged someone off the pitch, right? That was pretty funny.
He got booked, right?
So I was going to say, like, he got booked for that. So really, was it Kleber? He should have got booked for that as well.
We just want consistency.
Yeah. I don't care. But all of those things to me sound like, if it's my team doing it, I think, yeah, good, haha, we're being funny and we're managing the game and we're shithousing and it's funny. Whereas if it's the opposition doing it, I'd get annoyed because they're wasting time and they're shithousing, right? So I think it's one of those things that works either way.
Well, if your Karma FC are winning 1-0, they take the ball into the corner in like the 84th minute.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's horses for courses.
Yeah. And, to me, as I don't know about, but like taking it into the corner and trying to keep it in the corner is different from like, sitting down when you could just walk off the pitch and change your clothes, or taking forever to line up a goal kick and then going to get a drink or whatever. On the other hand, I do think the referees need to be stronger dealing with this stuff. And this is a whole can of worms that we could get into and add another 2 hours onto the pod. So I won't go too much into it. But getting back to the action rather than the inaction, I think we saw in this match From a Yokohama FC perspective, first you've got to wonder, where would they be without Koki Ogawa? They've scored 60 goals this year and he's got 24 of them. And I think they wouldn't be second if he had only got 8 or 9. So I think that they're in debt to him. And I also think we saw how valuable Sven Brodersen is. Because although Rokitan did make one very good save from Nagasawa, a close range reaction save, that free kick, I think Brodersen would have made that reaction save. We know he can do that. And I also think he would have stopped that free kick because that was... Yeah, I don't know if Rokitan's positioning was wrong or if the wall was wrong or if he just wasn't ready or if he was just too slow. We need Stu. Stu's the goalie. Where's Stu? Get Stu back on. Speaking of goalies, I've got a stat for people who hate it when players aren't wearing numbers 1 to 11. Both goalies were wearing number 44 in this match. So there you go. That's for you guys. And on Oita, I think they've really come good this year, haven't they? And I think they're like Tokushima. They've shown the value of not losing. They've drawn a lot of games as well. They're not losing, and that's setting the foundation for them if they can then turn those into wins, which they have been doing. And they actually have only got one loss in their last 18 games, which is very impressive. They're unbeaten in 8 now, 6 wins and 2 draws. They've got to play Yamagata next and in at home, and then Ryukyu away, whereas Yokohama FC have to play Kanazawa at home and Kumamoto away. So some interesting matches coming up. But I think Oita, I think, will be confident that they might be able to overhaul Kumamoto. It's just a point between them.
Oita were very impressive in this game. I would say Of the teams that I've seen live, like in the flesh at Mitsuzawa this season, they are the most impressive away team I've seen. And some of their attacking was better than Yokohama FC's, to be honest.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are our four featured matches. Plenty of action we covered there. There's more coming up just after the break. I'm going to round up all the other matches from the weekend. Welcome back. Let's round up the rest of the weekend's action. And what better place to start than the Denka Big Swan Stadium, where 32,979 people were in attendance as Albirex Niigata clinched promotion with a routine 3-0 win over Vegalta Sendai. Niigata had the best chances in the first half, but Yota Komi's shot was cleared off the line, and Ryotaro Ito's free kick from right on the edge of the area hit the crossbar, so it was goalless at half-time. The home side finally took the lead in the 64th minute. Hard work from Komi in the corner won a throw-in for Niigata, although it looked like it came off Komi last. No Sendai players really protested or claimed the throw-in until after Ito had advanced unimpeded into the area and slotted home. Kaito Taniguchi hit the bar a few minutes later for Niigata, and Ito got his second in the 77th minute, when Yuzuru Shimada's cross deflected up nicely for him. Alexandre Geddes finished a counter-attack in the 94th minute for the perfect finish. Congratulations to Niigata, who returned to J1 after 5 years in J2. Things seem to be slipping away from Sendai, though. They're now outside the playoff spots for the first time since match day 3. To the bottom of the table now, and if your team was on a 7-game goalless streak like FC Ryukyu, who would you most want to play next? Seigen Kanazawa, of course. Although Kanazawa did go ahead in this one, Kyohei Sugiura passed to Hiroya Matsumoto on the left, and his cross was headed into the bottom corner by Masamichi Hayashi, the striker's 12th goal of the season. But Kanazawa haven't kept a clean sheet since match day 23, and their defence duly obliged just 3 minutes after Hayashi's goal. A free kick wasn't cleared properly, and Ryunosuke Noda rose above Honoya Shoji to head in Yuki Omoto's cross. Omoto then got his name on the score sheet to put Yuki ahead in the 43rd minute, as his shot from just outside the D went in off Taiga Son. Truth be told, Kanazawa offered little in attack after going ahead, and Yuki should have scored more in the second half, but their attempts either went straight at Yuto Shirai in the Kanazawa goal or missed the target completely. Nevertheless, a vital win that keeps Ryukyu's hopes of survival alive and moves them off the bottom of the table on goal difference for the first time since match day 19. Ryukyu moved above Iwate Gruja Morioka after the latter lost 2-0 at home to Tokyo Verdy. Second half goals from Itsuki Someno and Boniface Unduka did the job. In the 68th minute, Ryoga Sato played in Ren Kato and he cut back for Someno to score. Then, 7 minutes later, a corner wasn't cleared and Unduka headed in Keito Kawamura's cross for 2-0. Iwate are 5 points behind 20th place Gunma, Verdy up to 9th, and only 4 points off 6th. Also near the bottom, Omiya Ardija secured J2 football for 2023 with a 2-1 win at home to Renault for Yamaguchi. A double from Seiya Nakano inside the first 20 minutes settled the home side's nerves. With just 3 minutes played, Masaya Shibayama played a long ball down the right wing for Takamitsu Tomiyama to run onto, and his early cross found Nakano in space 6 yards out to put Omiya into the lead. Then, on 17 minutes, Tomiyama managed to flick the ball on for Nakano to get behind the defence and slot under Kentaro Seki, a move that started with a throw-in near Omiya's corner flag, and 5 touches later was in the Yamaguchi goal. Renofa pulled one back on the hour, a misplaced Omiya pass in midfield led to a quick counter-attack, and Hikaru Naruoka's low shot from long range nestled in the bottom corner after a slight deflection. Omiya held on though, and will be in J2 again next year. Yamaguchi and Kanazawa were overtaken in the table by Tochigi SC, who won 1-0 away to a thoroughly disappointing Machida Zelvia. Yojiro Takahagi scored the goal in the 41st minute, as Sho Sato's header came back off the bar straight to Takahagi. Prior to that, Machida's Dudu had volleyed over, while their keeper Koki Fukui made a fine fingertip save. In the second half, Ryo Nemoto made a goal line clearance to preserve Tochigi's lead, and then had a great chance to double it himself, but Fukui saved well again. In the 80th minute, Ko Miyazaki hit the post for Tochigi, but it ended 1-0. Tochigi are unbeaten in 4, while Machida are winless in 8. 3 quick fire goals from Blaublitz Akita just about killed off Jeff United Chiba's playoff hopes, but it was Jeff who looked most likely to take this one as they hit the post and forced Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka into a superb reaction save very early on. But in the 69th minute, a corner was headed in by Shota Aoki to put Akita ahead. 5 minutes later, Ryota Nakamura's cross was headed in by Ibuki Yoshida. Then 3 minutes after that, Aoki found Yoshida free in the area, and he played the ball across the six-yard box for Yosuke Mikami to tap in. 3-0 to Akita, the 3 goals coming in an 8-minute burst. This was Akita's 3rd win in a row. Jeff are in 10th, 4 points off 6th. And finally, Montedio Yamagata missed an opportunity to move into 6th, as they could only draw 0-0 at home to Mito Hollyhock. Both goalkeepers, Masaki Goto of Yamagata and Lui Yamaguchi of Mito, had to earn their clean sheets with several good saves, and Goto was helped by his post on one occasion. Mito had to play the last few minutes with 10 men as Koshi Osaki received a red card for a tackle on Yudai Konishi that the referee deemed dangerous. They just about held on. Yamagata substitute De La Torre rattled the post in the 95th minute, but it ended goalless, which means Yamagata are still 8th, but just a point off the playoffs. So that's match day 40 taken care of. I'll be back in a moment to look ahead to round 41 with John. Welcome back, everyone. John's here again, and he's going to help me look ahead to match day 41, which takes place Saturday 15th, Sunday the 16th, and Wednesday the 19th. Let's start with 2 games at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Tokyo Verdy play Niigata, and Nagasaki take on Yamaguchi. John, what do you think about those games?
Yeah, not too much in the way of startling insight from me on the Saturday games, I don't think, James. But I think in Verdy Niigata, well, a Niigata win would clinch the title for them, wouldn't it? Without anybody else having to kick a ball. So I imagine they'll probably be going all out to win that game. I think Tokyo Verdy have been in really good form recently. They're still in with a sort of very outside chance of a top six finish, but I don't think anybody seriously expect them to do it. So I think Niigata will probably win. And Nagasaki Yamaguchi, I think a few weeks ago, that looked like it could be an important game at both ends of the table. But I think at this point, with Nagasaki having lost against Tokushima last time out and looking off the pace at the top, and Yamaguchi already safe, I think that is going to have an end of season kind of feel to it, I think. I don't know if I might be doing these games a disservice, but that's kind of how I feel at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, Verdy, they've got an outside chance of playoffs. But, yeah, I think Niigata will want to win the title, won't they? And with Nagasaki, they've got to go for it. But they, like we said earlier, they're in such poor form that it's, they've got to win and hope, haven't they, really? So I'm not sure. But I know a couple of our friends of the pods are going to be at that game, Daniel and Victor. I think I'm planning to attend that game. So I hope that it's a good one, and I hope that they get the result that they hope they want. Let's move on to Sunday. There are 5 league games at 2 o'clock. Tochigi against Mito. Gunma against Iwate. Hashtag big boy football. Jeff United against Ryukyu. Okayama against Akita. And Oita against Yamagata. Plenty to get your teeth into there, John.
Yeah, I think ordinarily Tochi against Mito is something of a big game locally, isn't it? I suppose it just about fits the description of being a derby. I don't know if it has an official name, because, you know, Tochigi against Gunma is the Kitakanto derby, isn't it? But Mito is part of the sort of Kitakanto region, or Ibaraki, where Mito is located. So I think ordinarily that might be an interesting game, but I think it's the other 4 games where the action really is, isn't it, this time? I think Okayama against Akita, well, we know that Okayama must win to stay in that kind of automatic promotion hunt, so that they'll have to throw their version of the kitchen sink at Akita. Oita against Yamagata, well, Oita's playoff place is secured now, but Yamagata, after looking for a long time like they would be in the top 6, I'm starting to doubt that now. They really need to win this game. And Jeff against Ryukyu, Well, anything less than 3 points for Ryukyu and they'll be relegated, right? So they'll have to go all out to get something in that game. And yeah, you called it right, James, at Shoda Stadium. It's going to be big boy football. Gunma against Iwate. Pleasingly, they both have five letters in the English version of their names. And they're right down at the bottom, aren't they? 20th against 22nd. Iwate have slipped to the bottom of the table now. I'm not sure if I got this right, but I'm gonna give it a go. I think Iwate must win to stand any chance of avoiding the drop, and Gunma may need the 3 points as well to be mathematically safe. But they will only need a point to clinch survival on Sunday if Ryukyu fail to win their game at Jeff. So Iwate have got to go out for the 3 points. You expect Gunma might try and settle for a draw, but Gunma settling for a draw is probably ill-advised given their defensive frailty. So that could be a really good game, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. So a Gunma draw means that Iwate are down. A Gunma win means that Iwate and Ryukyu are down. Ryukyu have to win. Anything less for that than that is relegation for them.
You put that a lot better than I did. Yeah, that was good. You should have gone first.
And yeah, like you mentioned as well, Jeff, they need to win to keep their faint playoff hopes alive. But I think they're kind of similar to Nagasaki in that they're 4 points off and they're too inconsistent to have a realistic shot at it. We mentioned Akita possibly playing spoiler again for Okayama, because Okayama have to win and hope if they want to take second place. It's not guaranteed that they'll get third, but I think they could guarantee it here. And just on Yamagata, we had a question on Twitter from Alan Gibson at J Soccer Magazine. He asked, "Are Montedio the new Jeff or Verdi? Just when a game matters and something is at stake, they splutter again and again."
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think Jeff have become sort of worryingly less Jeff-like this year, with you know, notably fewer sort of embarrassing 1-0 home defeats to teams below them in the table. But I think for Yamagata, yeah, they just seem... I think Alan's got it right here with his question. They get to the very brink of greatness or of achieving something, and they just seem to fall short. I don't know what the problem is, you know, but I think is it three draws in a row they've had?
Yeah.
You know, and if they'd even just won one of those games, you know, we'd be talking about them as kind of not quite guaranteed for the playoffs, but they'd be in the top six and they'd be probably have one eye on a place in the postseason games, but they haven't done it, and now they've got hard work to do. The way that Oita played against Yokohama City was really impressive, attacking-wise, anyway. And Yamagata don't have the tightest defence in the league, do they? So I don't really see them going to Oita and picking up all 3 points. And then, yeah, a really good chance to finish in the top six might escape them this season, and they'll have to start again, go back to the drawing board next year. And... yeah, Peter Klimovsky seems very happy there. I think he's super popular, so I suppose he would stick around for another tilt next season. But you would maybe wonder if the front office would think about going in a different direction, because they've had all the plaudits for the exciting and attacking football, but it's not really led them anywhere. And yes, I'm starting to feel like I've been a vocal sort of Yamagata backer at the start of the season, I think. But yeah, they look like they're going to fall short, and it's not going to be because of a squad or player kind of technical ability, but just something is been missing. And I think perhaps having Akira Disaro's really helped them the last couple of games. Well, that's papered over some cracks, I think, there already. So yeah, I agree. I think I would never call anybody the new Jeff, because the old Jeff is still around. Yeah. But they're making a good, they're making a good case for it, aren't they, Yamagata? They just haven't really realised that the potential of that squad this season. I mean, they could still finish in the top six, but even if they do, I don't know how many people are seriously going to fancy them to make any kind of real impact.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, just thinking about the game the other day, they drew 0-0 with Mito, and they hit the post in stoppage time, and when they had a man advantage. a draw with Niigata is a good result, I think. But a draw with Omiya, probably not such a good result for a team that's looking to get into the playoffs. Now they've got to go to Oita, and then after that, they've got to play Tokushima. So these are massive games to finish the season for that battle for sixth place. But yeah, I said in reply to Alan on Twitter, but it seems like they've got this aura of like almost but not quite. And I don't know why, and I don't know what it is that they need to do to take that next step. But yeah, it's not quite clicking. Something's not quite clicking for them. Okay. Well, thanks, Alan, for the question. That was a good question. And they're not the new Jeff, because Jeff is Jeff, but they're. there's something. Anyway, let's move on to the other Sunday games. There are three more Sunday games we haven't mentioned yet. At 4 o'clock, Sendai play Kumamoto. At 6 o'clock, Yokohama FC play Kanazawa. And then at 6:30, Tokushima take on Omiya. What about these ones then, John?
Yeah, well, in my notes, I always try to highlight in bold text any games that have something interesting riding on them. And then by round 41, usually there's only two or three games to pick out. But now that the playoffs are back, I'm back up to, I'm highlighting things like a madman. I think I've got like seven or eight games highlighted here. And these three games all made my sort of pick of the week list. I think the 4 o'clock game, Sendai against Kumamoto. Well, Kumamoto's playoff place is locked in now, but we don't know whether they'll finish, third or fourth and get a home tie, or fifth and sixth and be away, although I suspect they will finish fourth and get the home game. For Sendai, they've been just so poor, haven't they, the last couple of months. The form is just dreadful. They just need a win desperately from anywhere. I don't think they're going to get it, though. I think they're going to have a really hard time against the Kumamoto side. They've got their tails up at the moment. I think this could be another bad difficult day at the office for Sendai. If they did win, it would be great in terms of kind of the playoff sort of excitement. But I think Kumamoto are gonna get something from that game. And then at 6 o'clock, well, we might disagree a bit or fall out over this, James. But I think Yokohama against Kanazawa. I mean, Yokohama need the win to be promoted, but they will already be up if Okayama have failed to beat Akita in the earlier game at 2 p.m. So this is almost like a rerun of last weekend, because Okayama went early, didn't they, at 1 p.m. away at Kofu and won. And Yokohama had the chance to clinch promotion at 6 p.m, but they blew it, getting beaten in that kind of crazy rainy game against Oita. So for Yokohama FC, they did seem quite nervy and tense early on in that Oita game, and obviously letting in an early goal, going behind in the fifth minute didn't help. I kind of feel like, in a way, the Oita game is good because they've had a full dress rehearsal for exactly the same set of circumstances again. And I hopefully won't be, treading on anyone's toes or upsetting myself if I suggest perhaps Kanazawa are not as difficult an opponent as Oita right now.
No, that's fair enough.
But, on the other hand, Kanazawa will have the handbrake off because they're safe. And they've obviously beaten Okayama just recently, so they're no slouches. They're not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. So I think Yokohama is going to have to be careful, and they certainly can't afford to let in as many soft goals as they did in the Oita match. But I do think, I feel like Yokohama is, by hook or by crook, and it probably will be 1-0 with the ball in the corner for more time than will be ideal. I think they will get the job done against Kanazawa in the 6 o'clock game. Well, I'm hoping so, because otherwise my son's going to be inconsolable if they don't do it. And then at 6:30, Tokushima v Omiya. Omiya are finally safe, but I think that also makes them a quite dangerous opponent, because you don't quite know what you're going to get from them. Tokushima are in sixth, and we mentioned they're going really well, 18 games unbeaten. I think Tokushima will probably get the points and then take another big step towards a top six finish. But I don't know, you might disagree.
Yeah, I think Tokushima will at least get a point from that. But I think now Omiya are safe, perhaps they'll be able to play with a bit less anxiety. And perhaps we'll, like you said about Kanazawa, play with the handbrake off. I think Kanazawa have got a reasonable away record. They've had some good away scalps this year. And apart from last weekend, the loss at home to Ryukyu, have been playing pretty well recently. And so I think we'll be confident they can get something from Yokohama. But of course, Yokohama are second. So they're at home. They should be the favourites. Sendai Kumamoto, Sendai, what the hell's going on there? No idea what's going on there.
I don't think Akirito will be back for next year.
Yeah, well, he clearly hasn't got any idea what's going on either. They desperately need something, but it doesn't look like they're going to get anything. And it's their incredible fall from grace. I fear it's likely to be continuing here. There's one more game we haven't mentioned. The Wednesday, the 19th, at 7 o'clock, Machida play Kofu. This is because, as we've already mentioned, and as I talked about on Big Pod the other day, at 2 o'clock on Sunday, Kofu are playing Hiroshima in the Emperor's Cup final at the Nissan Stadium in Yokohama. So a busy week for them. John, any thoughts on Machida against Kofu or Kofu against Hiroshima?
No, I think the Machida Kofu game is intriguing, as all J2 games are, as a kind of keen watcher. But we have to be we have to level with the listeners, James. It's not the main focus for us right now, because neither of these teams is going anywhere up or down this season. I think the Sunday game is going to be interesting. The Emperor's Cup, you know, traditionally is the kind of what's the opposite of the curtain raiser, curtain faller, curtain. What do you call that? The showpiece event at the end of the season, on the 1st of January. So it is a bit kind of incongruous to have it not only in mid-October, but also not at Kokuritsu Kyogyo, but at Nissan, and then taking place on the same day as like regular season games in J2. So I think there are a few kind of... obviously holding the World Cup in Qatar in the winter has bigger repercussions than the J2 fixture list, clearly, but it is a weird one. I'm hoping that I get to watch a bit of the game on Sunday, and I hope, I'm not a Kofu supporter, but as a J2 aficionado, I do hope they represent the league well and put on a good show. I think it would be bad just for the match itself if Hiroshima scored 2 goals in the first 10 minutes. And then you post for the rest of the game. So I hope Kofu play well and do themselves proud. I just had a quick look yesterday to see if there were tickets, how the tickets were going. From what I can make out, just checking online, there are tickets sort of available pretty much everywhere in the stadium. And I think that's partly to do with the fact that, the Emperor's Cup isn't as big of a draw as it was perhaps, back in the day. The teams involved are not the... in the nicest possible way, not the two biggest in Japan by any means. And yes, it's being held at Nissan, which is a huge stadium, right, with over 70,000 seats. But yeah, just looking right now, actually, as we speak on sort of Wednesday night, and there are tickets available in all sections. I think maybe the pricing is a problem. My gut feeling is the tickets are a bit too expensive around the ground. So I think that's unfortunate. But I'm kind of talking football admin rather than the actual match. Yeah, basically... I'm not too bothered about Machida Kofu on Wednesday because there are other bigger games to focus on, and I hope Kofu do well in the cup final, but I won't. It won't keep me awake if they don't, I don't think.
That Machida Kofu game, something that perhaps worth mentioning, the rumour that's been going around, I think it was today, that the current manager of Aomori Gakuin High School, the powerhouses of high school football, Go Kuroda, is perhaps in line to take over from Ranko Popovic as Machida manager next year. Interesting.
Yeah, it's at Aomori Yamada, isn't it? The famous, the famous high school, which is a sort of production line for quite a few J-leaguers in the past, and is just known for being... I'm trying to think of synonyms for powerhouse, but power station doesn't work. It's a very, very prestigious high school in footballing terms, and it will be an interesting appointment and a little bit out of left field, but why not? I think if you're the owners of Machida, you went with a kind of tried and trusted option in Ranko Popovic. That's not worked after 2 or 3 years. You may as well try something different.
Yeah, Steve Bruce is available. Alan Kerbishley is available still. He's probably third favourite for the job. Usually is.
Give it to Big Sam. Big Sam for the end of the season.
Yeah. Two games. Yeah. So I looking at the J2 fixtures for this weekend, 11 matches, and to my eye, there are only two involved that don't have any repercussions for promotion, playoffs, or relegation. Yeah, Tochigi Mito and Machida Corfu, which I think
non-stop is bangers, James.
Non-stop bangers. And also, just as an aside, quite interesting announcement from Kanazawa today. They've arranged a friendly against Seleso Osaka for the 19th of November, which I think will be quite fun. I mean, I know it's going to be one of those things where they change the entire 11 during the course of the second half. It takes ages to play it because there are so many stoppages for substitutions, but I still think it'll be quite fun to see Mutsuki Kato come back. See Kiyotake. And both teams have got Riku Matsudas, which is cool. And I think more should be made of that in the marketing. I hope that they do that. But I think it will be fun. Hopefully a good crowd will come along as well, because it's going to be quite a long off season for the J2 teams. And teams with small budgets like Kanazawa, this kind of thing would be, it could be quite an important moneymaker.
I'm curious to see if any other similar games are announced or come up, because I think you're right. I think we're looking at a kind of, is it maybe sort of, yeah, longer than usual break? Maybe there's like an extra month added to the off season, right, this year. So clubs are gonna they're either going to fill that with increasingly bizarre overpriced merchandise in their online shops, or they're going to try and play some actual matches to separate us from our cash. So yeah, perhaps there'll be more of these. I don't know. Post-season friendly might be the way to describe it, right? Yeah. So perhaps there'll be more of that coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kanazawa not copied, but they've got this idea from Fukui United in the Hokushinetsu Regional League, the fifth tier, because they've done this a few times. Last year they played a couple of matches, one against Kanazawa and one against Katale Toyama, as kind of preparation for their regional Champions League appearance. And I think before the pandemic, they had one against Jubilo Iwata as well. And they earned a reasonable amount of money from those, which they put towards paying for their expenses to go to the Champions League. So I think, yeah, and with it being Osaka, it's quite easy for people to get from Osaka to Kanazawa on the train or in the car or whatever. It's only a few hours away. The match is going to be on a Saturday afternoon, so people can make a weekend of it. And I think hopefully they'll get a lot of curious observers come along as well. And I'm sure they'll have plenty of merch there to try and flog. But yeah, I mean, I know it's just a friendly, but I'm still quite excited about it. I think it will be fun.
Good times ahead.
Yeah, so plenty of exciting football coming up this weekend. John, thanks very much for coming on and giving me all your thoughts on J2.
Yeah, no problem. Always a pleasure. Hope everybody enjoys the weekend.
Yeah, so do I. And thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon, if you do so. Thanks for, you know, downloading and retweeting and sending us comments and questions as well. Thanks again to Alan for his question on Yamagata. And coming up next with all the latest from J3 is Mike Innes with J-Talk Short Corner.
J-Talk Extra Time.
Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on fixtures in round 28, as well as previewing the round 29 games coming up this weekend. First, an item of J3 news since the last pod. SC Sagamihana say they'll be looking for a new coach for 2023 after it was announced Norihiro Satsukawa will be stepping down at the end of the season. Satsukawa has been in charge since May, an internal appointment made when Takahiro Takagi was fired after a disappointing start to the campaign. But a record of 4 wins, 4 draws and 12 losses means Satsukawa has been unable to bring about an improvement in Sagamihara's fortunes, and the team, playing J2 football a year ago, now sit third bottom in the table. Now onto the action, and round 28 kicked off with 3 games on Saturday the 8th of October. Holding on to second place by a point at the start of play, Kagoshima United went to bottom side YSCC Yokohama, who were without suspended captain Kento Dodate. A close game this one. Kagoshima's Frank Romero forced good saves out of homekeeper Ryosuke Sagawa. YSCC hit the woodwork 3 times through Daisuke Matsui, Loris Tinelli and Atsushi Kikutani. It was heading for a 0-0 draw until deep into stoppage time at the end of the 90 minutes, when Kagoshima's overlapping right-back Yuto Kide swung in across for the almost barrel-chested Jin Hanato to head beyond the reach of Sagawa. Wild celebrations among the visiting fans, who knew their side had stolen a crucial victory to hold on to second. Final score, YSCC 0, Kagoshima 1. Heartbreak for the home team, who competed well but couldn't quite make the breakthrough. It's all about the win for Kagoshima. How much of a difference could those 2 extra points make come the end of the season? Promotion outsiders FC Imabari also travels to Kanagawa Prefecture, where they met Sagamihara. Imabari, the stronger side throughout, they opened the scoring after half an hour as Takuro Uehara floated in a free kick. Hayato Teruyama's shot was blocked and Kanta Chiba fired home the loose ball. And on the hour, the visitors again made Sagamihara pay for an inability to defend a set piece, the ball bouncing around the penalty area and eventually being crossed for Chiba, whose header was saved by Kentaro Kakui, only for Kazaki Nakagawa to pounce on the rebound and score. For the hosts, Shogo Nakahana had a goal disallowed for offside with 19 minutes left, but they never really threatened. Final score, Sagamihara 0, Imabari 2. Norihiro Satsukawa's Sagamihara looked like they'd lost interest. Imabari did enough to take the points and keep alive their slim promotion hopes. Meanwhile, at the Ninjineer Stadium in Matsuyama, the mid-table game between Ehime FC and AC Nagano Parseiro finished level. As usual, where Ehime are concerned, there was fun to be had, the home side taking the lead in the 27th minute when Nagano couldn't clear their lines. Shuma Mihara flicked it to Takashi Kondo, whose shot was deflected off Takuya Akiyama and in. Parseiro started the second half with a bang, pulling level inside the first minute when Naoki Sanda was left in space to head home Yuki Morikawa's cross, and soon afterwards they went in front, another cross by Morikawa causing all sorts of problems for the home defence, Daisei Suzuki fluffing the clearance and Yuta Sato hammering in the volley. Kenta Tokushige made a couple of fine saves as Nagano pushed for a third, but with 3 minutes left, Ehime snatched an equaliser, Shunsuke Motegi's corner not being cleared, Makito Yoshida lashing in his first of an injury-hit season. Final score, Ehime 2, Nagano 2. The Mighty Mikans always entertain but have lacked the consistency to mount a promotion challenge. Parseiro likewise can on occasion compete with the best in J3, but as this game showed, they can't do it often enough to be convincing. The other 6 matches in round 28 were on Sunday the 9th, and in the latest victory of divisional leaders Iwaki FC, all the goals came in the second half, although at Gainare Tottori, Iwaki did have one ruled out for a perhaps dubious offside just before the break. Just afterwards, though, they scored and it counted. Hiroto Iwabuchi's powerful drive parried by Kentajiri Ryo Arita, dispatching the rebound with no little composure. And in the 53rd minute, Kaina Tanimura barged his way through the home defence to make it 2-0 from close range. Tottori had a purple patch midway through the half and pulled one back when Daichi Ishikawa was left unmarked to head in Hiroto Sese's in-swinging corner kick. Extra praxis for Iwaki in training this week, I sense. But Hiromasa Suguri's team made sure of the points with 8 minutes left. Masaru Hiraka's cross, half cleared by Kosuke Masutani, only for it to fall to Arita, who fired low and hard inside Tajiri's near post. 12 now for the season for rookie Arita. Gainane's Mun Inju was stretchered off in injury time after he appeared to suffer an accidental blow to the head while challenging for the ball with Genki Egawa. Let's hope Mun recovers quickly and completely. Final score, Tottori 1, Iwaki 3. A tough run of fixtures has seen Gainane lose 3 of their last 4. Iwaki have recovered from their round 25 loss and look to be heading for the title. Who might finish in the top two alongside them is a very open question, but a pair of the contenders met in the game of the round, perhaps one of the games of the season, between Fujieda Mai FC and Matsumoto Yamaga. Matsumoto have struggled for goals in recent weeks, but they started on the front foot, Paulinho and Ayumu Yokoyama both forcing top-class saves from Kei Uchiyama. At the other end, Victor did well to tip Ryo Watanabe's header over the bar, but as the game wore on, the feeling grew that Matsumoto are getting flustered by their inability to turn good approach play into goals. Uchiyama again kept them out when he produced a double save to stop Yokoyama and Yusuke Kikui, and in the 88th minute, Mai FC delivered a sucker punch, Watanabe skillfully and unselfishly feeding Keigo Enomoto at the far post to finish past the exposed Victor. Final score, Fujieda 1, Matsumoto 0, a victory that symbolises the maturing of Mai FC under Daisuke Sudo, suddenly the nearest challengers to Iwaki and Kagoshima, while for Yamaga, they're not out of it, but they're now 5 points off second place, no goals and only 1 point from the last 3 games. And level on points with Matsumoto now are Katare Toyama, who made it 3 wins from 3 under new coach Michiharu Otagiri as they came away victorious from FC Gifu. The home fans haven't had much to shout about this season, but one undoubted success has been Kosuke Fujioka, who put Gifu one up in the 25th minute from the penalty spot after Yoshiatsu Oiji had successfully drawn the foul from Yuma Matsumoto. Fujioka's 14th of the season. But one Katare player who, under Otagiri, has had a new lease of life is Mateus Leiria, who just before the break opened up the left side of the Gifu defence and cut it back for Naoto Ando to volley in the equaliser. And with 15 minutes left, Mateus put his team in front, slotting home a penalty awarded for a push on Ando. Home sub Yuta Togashi had an equaliser ruled out for offside before Arthur Silva confirmed the win for the visitors. An opportunistic finish from 12 yards after good work by Ando and Shunta Takahashi. Final score, Gifu 1, Toyama 3. No wins in the last 6 now for Gifu, flatlining in 10th. Katare, in their promotion chase, have momentum, but 5 points off the pace with 6 to play. Will they run out of games? J-Talk Extra Time. Elsewhere, Tegevajaro Miyazaki bounced back from last week's heavy defeat at Girabans Kitakyushu to achieve one of their best results of the season at home to Fukushima United. Yasushi Takasaki's team were 3 up at half-time, taking the lead in the 13th minute via a counter-attack that Fukushima were slow to defend, Yuki Okada curling in an angled shot with his right foot. Keigo Hashimoto made it 2-0 with his second of the season, rolling a loose ball into the empty net after a punt into the area had caught Fukushima keeper Satoshi Osugi in two minds. And just before the break, a replica of the first goal saw Okada firing home the third. The Fukushima dressing room at half-time was likely not a pleasant place to be, and Toshihiro Hattori's team pulled one back in the 51st minute, a trademark Shun Obu far-post header following a well-worked short corner routine. But Tegevajaro restored their three-goal advantage almost immediately, Yudai Tokunaga bringing to an end a scrappy period of play by the simple technique of belting it into the top corner from 20 yards. Final score, Miyazaki 4, Fukushima 1. Takasaki getting a good reaction from his side, who climbed back up to 13th. A distinctly sluggish performance in the rain from Hattori's Fukushima. Vanarani Hachinohe's three-game winning streak ended in defeat as they took the long trip to Giravant's Kitakyushu. Shun Hirayama was the key to Giravant's taking the points in this one. He scored twice to make it 4 in his last three games. Against Vanarani, he opened the scoring in the 15th minute, heading in at the far post from So Fujitani's dinked cross. And Hirayama got his second only 10 minutes later, picking up on a wayward clearance by Ryusei Nose and beating Kazuki Hattori with a low shot from 20 yards. Hattori made a great save to keep out another Hirayama header just before half-time, and Vanarane gave themselves a foothold in the game 10 minutes into the second half when veteran captain Naoyuki Yamada hit a stunning 30-yard shot with the outside of his right foot. Soon afterwards, Ryusei Shimodo hit the post with a header as Hachinohe tried for the equaliser. Aoi Sato missing a great chance to pull his team level late on, but he couldn't get a clean shot away after good work down the right by Ryo Watanabe. Final score, Kitakyushu 2, Hachinohe 1. Giravants in 11th after two very welcome home wins. Vanarane struggling with their away form, only 7 points on the road all season. The same can also be said for Azul Claro Numazu, but if ever there was a nailed-on goalless draw, it was surely their match at Kamatamane Sanuki without a win in 3 months. For Numazu, Kosei Uryu had a scrambled shot blocked by Takuya Takahashi. Sanuki had a shout for a penalty waved away when Yusuke Yoshi appeared to be hauled down by Azul Claro's forward-turned centre-back Kenshiro Suzuki, and that was as close as we came. Final score, Sanuki 0, Numazu 0. Kamatamare remain second bottom and arguably on current form are the weakest team in the league. Azul Claro have no clear route to goal, but at least Kazuhiro Mochizuki is making sure they don't concede. J-Talk Extra Time. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 28, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top six teams are Iwaki with 63 points, Kagoshima with 59, Fujieda 58, Matsumoto and Toyama 54, and Imabari 53. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are in 15th, Hachinohe with 28 points. Then it's Sagamihara with 23, Sanuki 21, and bottom with 18, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 29 fixtures over the weekend when there are two games on Saturday the 15th of October. And as has been the case in recent weeks, both involve promotion contenders. Can fading Matsumoto return to winning ways at home to Gifu? In form, Imabari make the trip to YSCC. The other seven matches are on Sunday the 16th. Leaders Iwaki go to Numazu. Second place Kagoshima host a local derby with Miyazaki. Another big match involving Fujieda. It's fifth against third as they visit Toyama. Elsewhere, we also have Nagano against Sagamihara, Ehime at home to Kitakyushu, Fukushima hosting Saneki, and Tottori against Hachinohe. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.